Okay. The title of my talk is Chemotaxis at High Reynolds Numbers. The work done together with Boris Simon, actually it's been done because we haven't finished yet. The plan of my talk is first to give some introduction about flying insects, how they search for sources of water. Then I'll explain something more about their behavior. And next I'll formulate the model which is supposed to describe their motion towards the source of water. Okay, and then I'll say a few words about this model. Okay, so as I was saying, many flying animals, not only flying and insects, rely on their sense of smell for searching food or mating or some other things. And this is a difficult task because normally atmosphere is turbulent and the odor is mixed in some very intermittent manner, and turbulent plumes, the structures where most of the odor is concentrated, are highly irregular, and so you know everything about them. So the simple strategies like ascent towards the gradient used by bacteria and chemotaxis will not work normally, because in a plume, gradients are don't point towards the source here. That's why one has to invent something else in order to find the source.
What does the word chemotaxis mean?
Chemotaxis means that you want to find the bacteria.
Recognizing chemicals.
Yeah. So you imagine you have a source of food and bacteria, and it diffuses, of course, according to because of Brownian motion, it diffuses, and there are bacteria which want to find the source, and they start to move towards the gradient. Their velocity is proportional to the gradient of the concentration, and is pointed towards it. And well, after some time, they find it normally. But in turbulent plumes, you have filaments where gradients fluctuate wildly, and it doesn't point anywhere. So this is a different sort of problem, and it's much more complicated one. So one way to overcome this difficulty is to wait, stay here for a long time and go over the plume, and then go exactly like here towards the gradient. But this is not good for two reasons. First, the time to average the concentration within the plume is rather long, and second, fluctuations of the gradient are much longer than average gradient, so you won't feel this slight variation of concentration, average concentration on the background of the strong pulsations at each point. Okay, so insects or any other animals have to invent something else. And, well, there are actually many different strategies to search for the source, and I will be speaking about one particular strategy, which is called optomotor animotaxis. Well, I don't want to explain what these words mean, but maybe it will become clear later. Well, this means that there is optics involved, optical cues involved, and this means that there is wind, which is also important for insertion. Okay, so as this name assumes, the mod had to, besides having sense of smell, they have to be able to determine the direction of wind, and this is one requirement which we assume, and they do it optically by looking at the images on the ground, how they move, and if these images move in the same direction as their body axis, then it means that this is the direction of wind, because otherwise the objects on the ground move in a different
way. Is there an experimental support that they really see objects on the ground?
Mm-hmm. Well, what else can they do?
Yeah.
So people have put in moving grounds? People actually put in moving grounds to confuse them?
Yeah, this is possible.
You can make blind flies rather easily.
Yeah,
but that's just not life, and it's the floor moves, and you actually know that.
Yeah, they use this as you said, they can make floor moving, and
that's
it is instead of, it's like there was wind.
But is it detecting their motion, their own motion, or the wing, and they absolutely know? How do you detect?
He said when the floor is moving, they think there's wind. Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah, they do that. So
yeah, they look at the objects on the ground and they see.
They think they're moving.
Where the velocity is directed, the velocity relative to the ground. And
so that's the since their body velocity.
There is also wind,
relative
then
to the ground,
the velocity.
Right?
But presumably, if they fly right into the wind and compensate. Uh-huh. Right, they can stabilize,
right?
And that would be the direction and velocity, right? Because they have an idea of how much effort they're generating.
The bus?
Very close to you bicycling in the bike path in the wind, right?
Okay. Basically, the strategy consists of two different modes. One mode is search mode, when they lose the plume, they start to search. And the second is advancing upwind, when they feel in the presence of suitable pheromone input. Well, I forgot to say that these are normally male mosses, which are looking for female mosses, and which releases pheromone sexual attraction. So the order here is pheromone. So there are two modes of the search. First is search, and second is advancing upwind, when there is suitable pheromone input. And both of these modes use so-called counter-churning pattern of motion, which consists of succession of turns alternately to left and right with respect to the wind direction, which on the picture you can present it as such a excursions to left and right, and the resulting displacement, if there is any, is roughly upwind, is approximately upwind. So in this
So it's not that different from bacteria, right?
No, it's very different from bacteria because
I mean, they still explore face space. They don't just sit there. They still run
around. Sure. But bacteria they feel instantaneous gradients and they move.
No, I don't think so.
They move in all directions, but they change frequency depending on the direction.
This observed?
Yeah, of course this is observed.
But you know, this is the way you sail upstream, so are you sure this is not purely mechanical and not related to chemical at all?
But they don't use sail.
It's easier if the wind helps you, right? Rather than just use your wings.
No, but it's only if you have sail. But
they don't do it without an order.
No, aircraft would never.
Wait a minute, I will say.
Yeah, but the aircraft doesn't have wings. The aircraft is a completely different animal.
So this can be counterturn can be either like this, this non-zero mean displacement upwind, or it can be like this when the mass casts back and forth without any resultant progression. So this type is used in the search mode, and this is used when there is pheromone somewhere around and it advances. So there are two important things to be said about this counter-turning. The first thing is the counter-turns are self-steered as opposed to being gradient-steered. This means that the turns happens not because the mouse feels the edge of the plume, for example, feels the gradient here and starts to turn back inside the plume. And this is not the case. But rather, there is some internal turn generator which alternates between left and right, the frequency which depends on the thermal input. So this is not, as you said.
This is not systematic instead of random.
Yeah. So it's not because of gradients here.
Yeah.
Like, people made many experiments which show that this is not rising. And second important thing is that they don't feel homogeneous concentration. And rather prefer to feel pulses of pheromone. So if you make an experiment with a homogeneous distribution of pheromone somewhere, they will not perform this. All they do, they will search, even though there is pheromone concentration. For example, an experiment, if you put here half plane of homogeneous concentration of pheromone and put here a moss, it will fly and finally it will enter the plume and make a short upwind progress here because of the pulsation when it crosses the border, and then it will stop and will continue to perform this search more. So here I think we said all important things. So I'll pass to the discussion of the model and formulating it. So the experiment suggests that there are three parameters which are controlled by MOS. The first one is the velocity, linear velocity of flight. How fast it moves along each leg. The second parameter is the duration of each counter turn, and the third parameter is the angle with respect to the axis of.
And these two are really independent parameters: the linear velocity and the angle.
Well, they are dependent through the concentration because.
Because you would get an angle if you just assume that the velocity of this little knot is always the maximum velocity.
No, it's not true. There are variations in velocity, so it becomes smaller when there are more. There is more order and it's faster.
I see.
It moves faster when there is no order. So, and the third parameter is the angle. Well, or I already know
the angle. The angle during that time stays constant.
What?
The angle stays constant.
No.
At constant wind speed. Because the angle and the linear velocity could be coupled by just a cosine law.
No, it doesn't stay constant. Angle is here, so in the search mode it's E over 2 here, and it's less than E over 2 in the advancing mode.
Oh, I see.
So, and both of these parameters, so I'll denote it also as N, a unit vector here. So, all of these parameters, they actually depend on pheromone input. And moreover, they are random. Some random functions of time or whatever. And the randomness is due to three reasons, at least. The first reason is because concentration fluctuates at each point, so there is always different input of pheromone. Second, wind itself is random, so it will alternate inevitably the motion of moss. Say gust of wind, you throw it away, may throw it away. And the third reason is in here, in tau, because this internal turn generator which teaches this program of counter turning is also sort of random, so the durations will be random even if all these things are the same. So this is a sort of source of randomness. And now, because everything is random here, one would like to formulate some statistical model of how these masses move and search for a plume. And it is natural to try to write some diffusion equation, effective diffusion equation, which would be valid on times much longer than the duration of one counter turn. And to do it, it's one can write the displacement of a moss as a sum of displacement over each leg, which is something like that, and find average displacement and the variation.
So your model is not questionable. You believe that the strategy is fixed, and you are not searching for a better strategy. You are just solving the problem for this strategy.
Yeah. What I do, I search for this strategy. I use a strategy which is experimentally observed, and then I'll have some parameters which I might want to optimize.
So you don't believe that turbulence may change strategy?
No, turbulence is a reason of this strategy to exist. So they live in turbulent atmosphere and they have to deal with it. So selection probably acted in a way to find some optimal.
You are not sure why this strategy is optimal.
Well, I'll give you some plausible arguments why it is better than something else. If I have time, of course. And using this expression, you can find that the displacement is proportional to some function, a known function, which can be expressed through these averages, and is proportional to the wind velocity. This is the velocity of wind. Let's normalize it like this. After, and here we have some diffusion coefficient, and after that it's easy to write the equation. I'll first write it down, and then you discuss all the symbols appear here. And the equation is written for the probability to find a moss at some position at some certain time, and it is obviously equation here. And let's discuss these coefficients. First, W is proportional to the average of V times cosine phi, something like this. And the diffusion coefficient is proportional to average of this sort, sine phi. And the T here is some partially average concentration, which is which can be written as some kernel. Well, since I exclude all the scales smaller than tau and the distance which it passes during one counter turn, so I have to average over these scales to have everything dependent on this partially average concentration, which can still depend on time and coordinate and fluctuates also, but it is already partially averaged. And bar U is also partially averaged velocity of wind, because I get rid of fast fluctuations of the velocity and let this is only some more slowly fluctuating wind direction.
And do you, here you account only for this process of advancing uplink, yes, because it's proportional to velocity. Is the search part of this behavior included in this?
Yes, it's included in this condition, because as I said, okay. As I said, these legs are not of the same length because of this randomness which I described here. So inevitably it will diffuse in this direction. Of course, it will also diffuse in this direction because this is also random. But in a moment I'll tell that it's not important because drift dominates. So we can write the form of this diffusion coefficient to accounting only. Accounting only transversal part. It means that I'll take only transversal diffusion into account and not diffusion in that direction, because it's not important because of the drift. So, okay, so this is... I also must say what is the dependence of this function on the concentration, on the average concentration. Obviously, W is zero when there is no pheromone, because it searches and doesn't advance. And it is increasing function of concentration. And this Z of C is a decreasing function. Because as the pulsations of pheromone get stronger, the angle is increasing and the velocity is decreasing, and the duration also decreasing. So the really this is should be well, but in clean air I forgot to say that in clean air the counter turns are very wide and can reach tens of lengths of the insect. But in strong pulsations of pheromone, they are very narrow and they move almost always staying within the boundaries of time average. So we don't know exactly how this function depends on the concentration, because we don't know much about physiological mechanisms governing the flight. But we can claim these dependencies, and we can also adjust them, optimize them in order to reach the best strategy to have. Okay, so after having written this equation, one would like to solve it, and this is not very easy because all these coefficients are fluctuating functions of time and space, and therefore the first idea one has is to use sort of mean field approximation.
So you'll be solving this equation in some given in homogeneous field C, or C just a number?
No, C is fluctuating concentration, partially averaged, but
fluctuates in time but not in space.
And in space.
And in space too.
Okay. Yeah, it fluctuates both in time.
But it has some kind of ingredient or what?
Yeah, so.
Doesn't
it? Yes. Yeah. So the problem is that it's only partially averaged and not fully averaged quantity. So the first idea is to solve some mean field approximation saying that you have mean plume which has some profile, and inside the plume you have coefficient of diffusion d1 and outside you have d2, and then try to solve to find the probability to reach the source in time t. Well, this is the most important object to find, the probability to reach the source in time t, which can be found, which can be obtained by solving.
Depends on L.
Yeah, and it depends on L, on the initial distance.
No wind in this situation.
Right, there is always wind. Without wind, we can't orient. The wind is the only thing which orients the flight towards up in. So, this function is the first thing one could try to measure experimentally. And unfortunately, I never saw any experimental paper. I studied biological literature, but I never saw anybody trying to measure this. But I think this is the best object to measure, actually. And, well, in this simple setup, you can solve this equation and to find the probability. And, well, it's more or less obvious, because if you are flying not very long time, then you stay always within the plume, and the time to reach is just L over V. And if you have enough time to leave the plume, it goes away, and then it doesn't move in Z direction, but diffuses until it comes back to this, to inside the plume. But and you can find that because of this excursion outside of the plume, the time goes as L squared. But somehow this is not very adequate model, because real plume structure is much more complicated. And there are regions of clean air, and there are some patches of the scalar which come here, and the most should try to orient itself by finding these patches, and by this it knows that it stays somewhere inside the plume. And so another model which one can consider is that it has inside the plume two coefficients, d1 when it touches wedge, and d2 when it's in the region of clean air. And then you have some average coefficient which is given by such a ratio, where T in and T out are the time you stay within the plume, within the patch or outside the patch, and depending, and this is some function of G actually. Therefore, in order to consider this problem, one has to know statistics of plume in some detail to find what is the average time you stay inside the plume and what average time you stay outside of the, not the plume, but this small parcels of scalar, yeah, filaments. And by choosing this coefficient d1 and d2, you can optimize these times and make this function depending on z in the right way, so it never leaves the plume and continues to stay always inside it. So the dependence of average time it takes to reach the source is proportional to it, which is the right law. And well, but I don't have time to speak any longer, I guess. So that's it.
So what is the result?
Well, the result first is that this equation which we formulated, and the second result is well, after you can solve this equation and try to find this function, the probability to reach the source in time t, and this is a proposition to experimentalists to measure this function, say measure percentage of butterflies that reach the source
and
in time.
Compare with some prediction of theory. What theory predict?
Well, theory can
depend on some parameters.
Well, it, for example, you can claim that t star is proportional to l or l squared. There are many different situations. And depending on the parameter of the plume or whatever, it can behave either like linear law on distance or quadratic law and so on. So these are very clear dependencies which can be certainly can be measured. And so and then we can try to invent some function. DOT, for example, for engineering applications, for making a robot which searches for something. We can take some test function like this, which is D1 or D2, and try to optimize the parameters in order to get there faster. So that's so.
Okay. Question?
So I guess the ultimate goal is to find the mean gradient, even though I guess at any instant time it doesn't care, it shouldn't follow the local gradient. So if one have a simple model which is a random walk with bias with which corresponds to the mean gradient, and that model in principle also gives you this walk back to the source. Is this,
well,
so this
of course,
how would that
somehow
how does the bias
gradient is
get
contained
the information
in,
from
in this equation, because because you differentiate it here, but this is not average gradient, but somehow
a
partially
local average.
Not local.
It's not local.
Because you
agree.
You explore
it's not what is it?
By diffusing
concentration.
By diffusing you explore large portions of
right,
space.
So
and
from a physical point of view, where does the main gradient occur in this formulation?
Well, instead of navigating by the gradient of the field. You can navigate by the gradient in the statistical distribution of the field. Right? What's happening is far away, there's some statistics of large fluctuations which depends on the distance from the source.
Right.
And
okay.
The MOD is detecting these large fluctuations, and in response to large fluctuations, it flies a little bit upwind. Right.
Okay.
But then it cruises the center. And it goes crosswind until it hits another filament. It ends up with an effective diffusivity, you know, not those bare diffusivities, but the effective diffusivity,
right,
which is averaged over longer times, which depends on the statistics of these large deviations. That statistics depends on the distance from the source, and therefore you can fly by that gradient.
Right. Okay. So that's
idea. And another thing that Jane was trying to convey is that if you do a mean field theory, that is, you just try to navigate by some mean dependence, we seem to end up invariably with a quadratic scaling for the search with distance. Right? Because ultimately you always lose the scent and diffuse out. And luckily diffusion is one dimensional, so it'll come back. But still.
And square is bad. You want linear.
Yeah, it's bad because it's too long.
And and this is preliminary. I think we can see it, but it seems to be that once you include fluctuations, you can achieve effective dependence. Dependence of this effective diffusivity. on the distance from the source such that you're most likely not to stay within the plume. Right? Which is to say that the diffusivity is decreasing with distance from the plume sufficiently fast that there is a chance that you will never lose it. And then you end up with linear scale. But it's intricate because if you're very far away, you still have quadratic scaling, and we don't quite understand the crossover.
The linear looks like ballistic. I would bet that you will get something between 1 and 2.
Well,
and you still have some diffusivity.
Yeah, no, I think
it might be decreasing with air, which will give you some intermediate scale.
No.
The current best guess is that there is a crossover, and if you start very far, you have quadratic scaling, and but if you are sufficiently close, you have ballistic scaling.
And ballistic, but with the coefficient, with the relatively small coefficient.
Yeah.
But it can't be. Because the damping goes ballistically, then stop. Ballistically, then stop. So basically,
right. And then this small, getting very, very small, it's called diffusion, what you described.
One question that I have, is they really zigzag up in the regular manner that you have drawn it?
What?
You say the frequency changes, what do they do? Do they always fly about the same distance, up and down, or do they?
Well, it's about the same, but there are. In this regime, it's almost exactly the same. So the diffusivity in transversal direction is small, but in this search mode, it is the difference can be quite large. So it can go L and then turns back and go L over 2, and then the fluctuations are strong in this regime. So the coefficient of diffusion outside. In depth and so forth, is much larger than that of here.
In your model, you have a fluctuating velocity.
Velocity is not.
Yes. And how big are the fluctuations of the velocity compared to the mean velocity?
These are not fluctuations of the velocity. If it goes here, the velocity is almost constant. The velocity depends on the concentration. And if.
I think Abraham is asking about the flow velocity, right? The turbulent velocity.
Yes.
And then he's answering about the mass velocity.
No,
mass. For turbulent velocity, you just make some, your best assumption. There's some mean flow and some
very small damage.
Right, there's some kinetic energy in turbulent fluctuations and, one point, so.
There is, but on one hand, R square, of course, is less optimal, but on the other hand, you have to wait for strong fluctuations. So the
fluctuations
for
of
the
scale. Not of.
So what does the. So which one wins?
Wait.
If you have to wait for half hour the large fluctuation of the scalar, then maybe it's better to run in motion.
At least n is where all the pleasure and n is the first power. If you are right, then there might be some intermediate.
If your source is very
the
crossover, the super
moon. No, no,
no,
first. So I understand this.
The time scale is any turnover. Right? There is an integral time scale, and unless you're looking for very, very large events, like distribution.
You don't need very large
potential. Well, that we don't know. How far beyond the variance is the mass looking?
That's exactly my question.
We don't know that.
Okay.
So you're also telling me that the mass when it's in the search mode it is fluctuating velocity speed that actually goes up and down stationary to the floor. It doesn't get pushed back and forth like crazy.
I think we should.
Go on.
Yeah, you can also think about these with one of the animals, the Eulerian animal, right? You know, for example, lobsters are Eulerian animals, they do the same thing, and that. One of the ulterior motives for having Xenia talked about this before at the scale discussion is so now here is an applied context in which one wants to know the statistics of the scale in a Zoom, and it isn't obvious what the knowledge of exponents teaches us about that. And that's what I want to provoke in the discussion. I remember a meeting long time ago where Benoit Mandelbrot described his seminal contributions to scaling theory and how he has predicted the fractal dimension of the clouds. And Paul Martin in the audience asked if he could predict weather too. So, the annoying puzzle that we've encountered is okay. For this practical purpose, we need to understand right the dependence of statistics of a large scale of fluctuations on the distance, because we believe that's what gives Moth a clue, and we are somewhat clueless ourselves. But still, you know, we can probably calculate things like this, you know, at least in, you know, for the Bachelor model, you know, we can calculate anything we want, so just we try. More generally, let me just throw a couple technical questions that I personally like to understand. I'm not implying that these are profound, but I think they're somewhat amusing. So one question is, okay, we understand the anomalous scaling in stationary case. How about the decaying case? And
what do you mean by scaling? You mean the scaling of structure function as a function of distance at a given time?
Yeah.
Or single point PDF is a scale invariant with respect to, not scale invariant, it is so similar with respect to theta and sine. Because there are two different sort of similarities involved now. One with respect to space and another with respect to time.
Both.
With respect to time,
both.
I guess Massimo can answer you.
Well, so we were having this discussion with Massimo, and I don't think we disagree, but we have some problems understanding it. And I would argue that the scaling that you get in a decaying case has nothing or very little to do with scaling in the stationary case, which really means that if you do an experiment which is an initial value problem, right, you set up a block and you see how important, if scaling is not parameterized by integral scale as a function of time. That's what it seems to me, and I can give you a reason for why I think that, but it's I won't do it in my allotted 5 minutes. So another thing that came up, provoked by this moth plume, is well, how about the scaling of steady state problem or point source? This plume problem. It seems to me that we can expect some non-trivial scale in that case coming from the negative anomalous exponents that
scaling of what?
Zero mode.
Scaling of what?
Multi-point correlation function.
As a function of distance.
Yeah, as a function of distance with the point. With the point source. Remember that in all our zero mode calculations, we were looking for positive exponents, but we also had negative exponents. We didn't care about negative exponents because we were looking at the inertial range. But now we have a source which is smaller than the inertial range. So we should be looking for negative exponents.
That's a normal scaling.
Okay.
Good. Well, what are the plume statistics of a point source? Well, how do you define that? How do you define the turbulent statistics of a plume?
Well, I think it's certainly perfectly well defined mathematically, right? So we have a point source, and we can have the wind or not have the wind. Right. We have stationary.
No, I'm assuming some object that creates like the wake of an object. Is that what you mean?
No. Well, okay. Imagine that you have a little bug emitting
a pheromone,
and let's imagine that right, there is some boundary condition far away, like absorbing it. So we have presumably stationary statistics. And we can add one point statistic at a given point.
I'm saying if there's an object blowing around the bug, I mean, if there's a wind blowing around the bug, you have a wake. So
Very good. So, yes. I'm thinking about that.
Okay.
This is, right, again, the passive scale, right? All the scale is a scale of the block.
This is the same as to ask what is the statistics of spatial scalar as a scale much larger than Planck scale. And even though the something for single point may give its own peculiarities, but the problem when you have statistically homogeneous situations, you just ask about scales much larger than Planck scale. I mean, we have paper and write in volume, and you need us.
Okay, so then, so what's wrong about the appearance of modes like that?
What we show in this paper is that in the bachelor case, you have a very strong anomaly of scaling, even you don't have scaling at all, because your correlation function strongly depends on the geometry. As long as you go to non-smooth velocity field, which means that you have, you are somewhere in the inertial interval, then your statistic is of course non-Gaussian, but your scaling is normal. And it is basically the same that considering the decaying case. So actually, both your questions that you ask, they are related. Mm-hmm. So the behavior of the scalar at scales much larger than Planck, and the behavior of the decaying case are related and are similar in this respect. That when you have bachelor case, then you have scale invariance and self-similarity broken. When you have non-smooth case, then you have self-similarity.
Okay. So I think I respectfully disagree. Because I'm asking a very specific question. So you have calculated these negative modes and you find that
for bachelor case
is a little special, as you know. But I'm willing to consider perturbation of a bachelor case.
We did 2 minus gamma of psi expansion.
Okay, fine. And the statement is that there are no negative
moments. The statement
is that
there is no more scaling over
there. The exponents are negative, as Boris says. It's exactly like.
Of course they are negative, but they are normal. You take phase correlation function, which is given by respective zero mode, and the scaling of all other functions is just some powers or some proportional to the same.
But
it's arc in minus something, but that's, I mean, that's for sure. I mean, your correlation
is what? It's a non-trivial exponent?
It's a trivial exponent.
Uh-huh. And the statement is, because I'm pretty sure that there are non-trivial exponents.
Look, phase correlation function has a trivial zero mode, which is gamma minus.
I want to have a second opinion.
It's not very trivial. It is just trivial.
It's expressed
through. I'll write it to you. Come on. I mean, this.
Negative exponents.
We did 2 minus psi expansion and really for third order correlation function. And then you see there that what you get is that you get just a correction which is normal scaling with respect to the correlation function.
And the higher order function?
No, I don't have a general argument even though I'm sure that it exists.
Okay. Okay, so if I will invite more provocation here. I see the four.
So first of all, let me ask you a couple of questions about the crashing case itself. There is a question that it's open, I think, at least the following. Is about the relation between which comes both from instantons and from numerical simulations.
Oh,
physically why this is interesting is not the fact that zeta n is equal. What is important is that this zeta n term is reflecting the fact that when you look at, for example, at the connection, what you see in the field is that typically it is captured by Rankine. And the phenomenological argument for the satiation is just that if you have cliffs, so this quasi-discontinuity in your field, this is like an older exponent zero. So you should expect this kind of behavior. And indeed, that's what you observe. Now, the question is,
are you taking this for all n, both even and odd? Like if odd, is there an absolute value in there?
You take the even order ones.
Okay, yeah.
Or you take the absolute value if you want to take it, right? Now, the odd order ones, the behavior is above. It's still above. So now the question is, usual one in turbulence. How do you relate statistics? I mean, there are two things. You know the statistics in this case. It's a good situation because here you know the statistics and you know the structures which are related to this. So how do you see the structures here into the, and we know that this saturation is due to zero modes. So what is the reflection of this phase on the zero modes? It's clear that this must be reflected somehow in the angular structure because the zero mode will depend on all the coordinates. So it will be something like r to the zeta infinity, and then there will be angles. So how cliffs are reflected in this function here? Are there singularities in these angles? What's going on in this?
I guess what the work that we said a few years ago, it's basically about
in terms of particles.
Your particles clusterize and then cluster.
So you have a freezing of degrees of freedom.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, we do not really understand this.
I doubt that we'll ever understand it, you know, with any digitalization, because to have it that explicitly, you know, because, I mean, Nisha did it in kind of very convincing fashion, and I'm still there, I'm absolutely sure that he got the physics absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And then you see why it's getting independent on them. But then again, what he got was not an exact, you know, and what Zhenya and Volodya obtained was, I mean, you can also reinterpret on this language, but again, it's only for large GT. Where for HD we have this strong suppression of randomness. And I don't have any hope that we'll have this kind of description so we can just, you know, put our hands on it for arbitrary case.
But you should expect something like a relation between structures and statistics, at least for high order.
Michael, isn't it simply the reflection of the fact that the tail of the PDF is a crack?
No,
the tail of PDF is not
algebraic. The tail of PDF is not algebraic.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We may not.
At least there is a case where Lopakhin really found the whole PDF.
No. Lopakhin really found the...
Now, this is the form of the
PDF. ...requires bigger, further analysis.
You are welcome to make it. It's already 2 years.
No, what is the fluctuation from the...
Bigger.
You know it very well.
You may check this PDF.
That is
correct.
The PDF. And the sign of saturation is just that there's no argument. There's no argument.
Yeah, what's the illustration or whatever exponential function?
It's an exponential. It goes down.
Yeah. High order just don't exist if you have power scale.
But Burgess is this way, the bus is this way. You measure this and Q goes down this way. So that's not the same. That's not the same. You just measure. You measure Q and it's not the phase, it's this.
What you're trying to do.
Well, I would like to establish a connection between structures and
structures like that in zero modes.
Yeah.
And then P, what type of function is that? Is that a probability or is that a.
Yeah, this one Victor was asking about the probability density of increments, delta r of theta. So theta r minus theta is zero.
Now,
and indeed, in Burgess, saturation is due to the fact that this PDF goes down algebraically, so then there is a cutoff here where it cuts. So all the moments above a certain order they see are here.
Right.
But that's not what happens.
Now, what Krishna is talking about in the zero mode, right, you have an art of the something and then a function
of angles.
Of angles.
Right.
And what he was saying was that Misha had shown several years ago something, no.
No,
nothing.
Misha is not calculating the zero mode.
Not zero mode.
No. Not the zero mode.
So this is particle, dynamical feature.
Right.
Which is related to zero mode, but.
Not only
there could be singularities in the angle of
most
this
wrong. Most wrong. That's what they expect, because there must be a symmetry.
So if someone does some sort of 1D calculation of, you know, sawtooth stuff plus throwing in a whole bunch of random...
But you cannot do this with a small tool. No. If I may rephrase, I think Massimo's question, you know, the issue is, what are the, can one distill the most relevant part of the anomalous correlators that one can calculate? Most relevant in, you know, some sort of...
Okay.
What is the simplest object that will pick up that particular kind of a singularity and be orthogonal to all others, right? For example, we can pick this up just by looking at the gradient, but that is gradient squared. So that's a familiar one. But since the components do not saturate on the shocks, perhaps there are some other non-trivial structures. And that, of course, gradient squared is dissipation operator. So we can say, well, perhaps we can do everything in terms of dissipation operators. But I think the answer here is that we cannot do everything in terms of dissipation operators. And there are some more complex, tensorial objects that perhaps can be constructed that would, just pull out the relevant anomalous scaling piece to a given order, right? And you would not be able to construct, pull out the anomalous bit of the fourth order function by looking at only two points.
Could I ask a naive question? When you talk about clustering, is that physical space clustering? Or?
Yeah, you see that particles, when you calculate the structure function, for example, you have to stack your particles in two groups. That's the way you calculate, because they said when you express this, typically you have an object which is like e to the r and n minus k, e to the 0 to the k. So when you do this Lagrangian, you start two blocks apart, which is n minus k here and k here. Then afterwards they start separating, just because the velocity field is incompressible, so they will tend to separate. So what you would expect normally is that after a while, you will have a situation where all the degrees of freedom are all excited. So all the separation distances are becoming of the same order. Now, saturation in this language means that some of these degrees of freedom are frozen, which means that you have some distances which are getting of some order and other ones which are staying much smaller than that. And this also explains why you have saturation much more easily when the dimension is smaller, because when you put more and more particles, they do not have space, in a sense, to separate, which is what you observe. When you lower the dimension, the saturation, the order where you start saturating decreases, which in a sense is telling you that when you do not have enough space, the more particle you put, before you will get...
I don't understand. The particles don't interact with each other.
Sure they do.
They interact because they have the same velocity field.
Because they are in the same velocity field, and the velocity field is long range.
That's the reason for anomalous scaling. Why anomalous scaling, why your exponent depends on the number n? That's because when you add one more particle, or two more particles to the cloud, the whole scaling of the object changes. Because now your average depends on how many particles, because they... are in the same velocity. You may say, not interact, but they are due to the same random process, which means velocity. So any average related to them could not be, you do not have superposition. So that's why people call it interaction, which is, not physical interaction, but just being in the same velocity.
Statistical interaction.
Statistical.
Statistical.
the physical interlayers.
Can I ask a question regarding the structure of the shock there?
Yes.
When you approach a shock, I see that from two different sides, there are two different behaviors. But is there a scaling in R, like 1 over R, or 1 over R to the gamma, that you get for the velocity derivative when you approach the shock?
Velocity, this is the scalar.
I mean, sorry, the scalar there.
The scalar.
Yeah, the concentration.
The scalar locally goes like that to the zero. So if you look at...
No, I'm talking about the derivative.
So the derivative,
so the derivative apparently, if you have a shock there, goes to infinity, right?
Yes.
The question
is,
how
it's cut by the
one over?
One over.
No, I mean, so R is the distance from the shock. 1 over R.
It goes like a ramp nearby, then it jumps down, and then it goes.
Okay, so you know, if you have any kind of singularity in a two-dimensional field, this is returning to the question of algebra right here. So if you go with R is R to zero, you're going to get an algebraic tail if your approach to the singularity is 1 over r to the gamma is bigger than 1.
Algebraic tail on the spectrum and different.
Algebraic tail for the TDS.
Singularity
there is going to be a
Singularity does not mean algebraic tail.
Take a system of point vortices in 2D. Take the velocity derivative for that system of point. Well, it's singularity.
I'm not saying that the mechanism is wrong. I'm just saying here, it's not yet.
That's all the answer.
I'd like to finish. I'd like to finish, if I may, before you comment me out. So, if you have an approach to the shock that is sharper than 1 over R, there is a PDF for the distribution strict, if you assume ergodicity, when R goes to 0. You can prove that. Now, what is observed that there is a change from a Gaussian PDF at very large distances to something that has this kind of structure, very short distances. And maybe you can't come very close to the point where you have algebraic tails, but strictly speaking, in the limit, it is an exact result that for a random distribution of singularities, you have algebraic tails.
Well, so maybe the answer to that is that random distribution of singularities is not a very good model to describe what's happening. Because it's not happening. So, you know, we should be thinking of singularities as, some intermediate asymptotic, and, not push it into an asymptotic asymptotic.
I don't think there is any contradiction, because at large given, we do have a solution. We have an intermediate part of PDF which is log normal, and there is part of it which is power like, if you just, you may say, I consider this interval, and then you'll see this power law. And we are saying that there is not power law, we are saying that there is something like log normal type, and then it is cut off by simple points, so I don't think that we disagree on anything, because I mean, just the same. Take Polkovsky Lebedev also, take some interval inside, and you see your power zero, as an intermediate asymptote. And it is just nothing to discuss. Now, I want to disagree with your reformulation of Matima question. And but when you finished, or you had something?
Maybe we will discuss for all of us.
What do you mean?
What does it mean there's nothing to discuss?
No, no, I mean that
I would agree with you before we go on. From the
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. We only have 15 minutes.
But it's in another building, Boris.
Anybody got the title of that or
TV?
So the other question is about the multi-task. You don't know much about this.
No, but Matthew, let me just make a short remark on your previous question. What Boris tried to reformulate it, I disagree with this reformulation that you say that if it say could be described not in terms of epsilon, it's rather the question is could it be described in terms of n particle in some effective language. Yeah. It's not like you replace one field by another field, or you ask if it's scalar field that I have to use, or is it tensorial field. It's rather the question, if I describe it on n particle language, what is the best way to describe it? Because we do have one example in Dolkovsky Lebedev, where indeed you may consider this n particle language, and you do have some kind of a very compact description in which there is nothing but zero modes and the exponents. So in this sense, I don't believe that the question is whether, you know, to replace one field by another. It's rather, the question, if I stand on the level of n particle, can I make some kind of effective description. This would be also nice to generalize it then.
So the time is multi-time correlation. I mean, that's a natural question to ask because of the world's recent inconsolidated Dallas and the KPC. What has been shown is that even though the single time statistics, so the if you take the correlations at equal time, they have a good behavior. They, for example, in KTC, you just have equilibrium in 1D. When you start considering different time correlations, then you start to have non-Gaussian behavior in time. And so the question here would be, for example, for the same regression model that we considered so long for in the equal time case, what happens in the non-equal time correlation? So one question, for example, would be take bachelor case, where you know that equal time is Gaussian and has nothing special in it. Multi-time. And consider the multi-time. Would there be the same phenomenon as in KPC or?
We did it in 95 in our paper in Asia. For bachelor case.
Discuss with Misha.
Huh?
Yeah. Again, you disagree with your
code. Well, correlation.
So it's kind of general,
You ask about this, you don't know about general, but bachelor is clear. It's a lot correlated, and you know, because it's a Lagrangian invariant, you can always such different time correlations that don't decay at all. If you go by...
Of course, you will decay. So you need to pose a proper,
reference, right? Lagrangian correlation time will be your shift-taker.
No, but then what happens? To refine a little bit what Massimo said, there is a trivial possibility that there is no dynamical, non-trivial dynamical scaling, which means that if you recalculate everything from special domain to temporal domain, you just substitute t by I in some power for all correlation functions. And the question is it the case here or not? Is there any non-trivial dynamical scaling or not?
I think that, I mean, we did it at large D with Kazakov and Lebedev, not for Scalar. Not for Scalar, we did it for particles. On the particle language, you might ask the same. What is a different time correlation function, let's say, on distance between two particles?
We are talking about many particles, and we are talking about scalar correlation functions. Let's say structure functions is temporal domain. Take the same special position. Because the question: what is it scaling in time? Is there any anomalous scaling? Anomalous additional to what you expect for a special correlation function. Special structure function.
Would like to discuss some recent thoughts of his at Treblinka convection. Victor, Bob Kerr is eager to show some new things of his on convection. 5.
Discussion has to be not like having time limits or so, because it's not the way.
Okay, let's continue.
I just mentioned that.